Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you know that this is about life and stories and gratitude and ultimately who gets the love letter. Gratitude taken to the grave does not help anybody. A love letter is a wonderful thing to make somebody else's life richer. So today I'm going to go right to our guest, Robert Strong. And Robert, I'm going to ask you to tell us what you do. That is, how would you be introduced if you had your choice, which you do?
Well, I have two businesses, and one of them is I am a comedy magician, and I've been doing that since I was 12 years old, 1985. And then, you can do the math. And then the other business is I produce a speaker series with Juliana Gallen called Comedy Talks, where we honor and celebrate the legends of comedy.
And by the way, for those of you out there who missed the last Comedy Talks, which was last summer?
Last summer.
It was, I must say, I'm really picky and I'm not so nice about it even, but as a rule, this was the most wonderful theater I've ever been at. It was just spectacular. I hope you're going to be doing it again.
Yes.
Down the line you
down the line we plan to produce more.
Okay, good. Now, what does a comedy magician mean?
So, a comedy magician is a lot of things.
Yes.
Everything from cruise ships to colleges to festivals to theaters. But what I specialize in is corporate events.
Uh-huh. And how does word get around? You're earning a living, right?
I earn a living, yes. Yeah. I'm always good about adopting new technology. And when the interweb came out, I was one of the first people to put up a website. I put video on my website. I keep it up to date. I blog. So people find me online. That's about where I get about a third of my business.
Why don't you tell us, as long as you're on that topic, what is your website?
www.strongentertainment.com.
Okay. www.strong, strongentertainment.com.
That sounded correct. Strongentertainment.com, yes.
Did that sound right to you?
That sounded right. That's where I get a third of my business, and then another third is from repeat clients, and then the other third is from just sending out postcards.
Wonderful. So tell me about you. How did you, I always like to know how you got on the road you got on. And it is an unusual one. We don't find magicians every street corner.
Thank God.
Yes, I guess. What was your upbringing like? What was the culture in your home like? What were the expectations? And
well, my parents, we brought us to a small town.
And how did you go so wrong?
Yeah, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. The wrong turn in Albuquerque. My parents brought us up in a small town, and
where is that?
Frederick, Maryland. And one of us was going to be a doctor. The other was going to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. My older brother did become a doctor. He's a dermatologist in Florida. And about age 12, my summer camp went on a field trip to the Baltimore Inner Harbor. And I saw a magician there doing magic. And I came home that day and I said to my parents, I want to be a magician.
And they said?
Well, my father said, well, I know a podiatrist in my office building who is a magician. I'll introduce you to him.
Oh.
So he taught me four magic tricks. I bought those four magic tricks. And a week later, I had a business card and I was doing kids' birthday parties for money.
So I have a question, though.
Yes.
When you say, your father said, I have a friend who's a podiatrist, and he's a magician, is the message that being a magician was a nice sideline?
Exactly. But at age 12, I don't think my father was concerned about it at that point. So I later met that magician that I saw in the Inner Harbor, probably 15 years later. He's in Florida, and his name's John Eakin. And I figured out he was the magician that inspired me. We were both adults at the time, and it was a great honor to get to meet him, since then we performed with him. We performed together. Also, my parents have been so supportive. Whole career, they're my biggest fans. Every time I perform, they're in the front row cheering louder than everyone else.
So they didn't regret a little that you did something more standard in life?
Well, their rule was go to college and then I can do whatever I want to do. Okay. So I went to college and I paid my way through college, so I don't think they could complain.
Okay, so that going to college, and then you can do whatever you want to do. This kind of a way of saying, do what you want to do from a position of intelligence and education, not default.
Yes, and I also think they're pretty confident, because at age 12, I was doing kids' birthday parties. At age 14, I was street performing. At age 16, I was performing at comedy clubs. By the time I was 18, I was touring colleges, festivals, and theaters. So it was steady work.
So what is the pull to you? I mean, the question is, I saw the exhibit.
Yes.
On
Houdini?
On Houdini.
Fantastic exhibit.
It was. And it was fascinating to see what went beneath this man's desire to be a magician.
So
I mean, it was kind of, you know, dotted with a lot of spiritual stuff and wanting to debunk dishonest people.
Yes.
And just staying in a world that was not understandable to the average. What's with you?
So for me, it's a little different. There's a moment when a magic trick has a magic moment, that moment where everybody's fooled or tricked. The audience can't control it, but they're reverted back to about a nine-year-old where there's really mystery, wonder, and awe in theater in the world.
Where adults are not in control.
Where they're not in control. And
don't want to be, probably.
All of a sudden, everything is mysterious again, and anything is possible. And it's a quarter of a second, but that feeling, I get to experience it over and over and over time. Every time I perform, I get to watch an audience just revert back to this child.
Yes. And that, by the way, that not wanting to know, I find that really an interesting topic, because I always want to know how they cut the lady in half.
Everybody thinks they want to know.
That's right.
But they really don't.
No, because I could find out.
Yeah, you can go online. You go to the library.
I won't do it.
It's what happens is...
How you cut that man's tie in half at that show I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is great. Robert took this hapless fool on stage and asked for his tie, cut it in half. Man was horrified. And somehow, by the end of the show, you gave him his tie back.
I restored it, yes.
So we all want to know how you did that.
You don't.
We're not going to find out from you.
No.
Oh,
okay. So when I was a, I guess, teenager, David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear. And being a magician, I knew how it was done. And everybody insisted that they really wanted to know the method. And I told a few of my friends, and the conversation was over. If I had not told them, they would have, to their grave, they would have told their grandkids about this magic trick that David Copperfield did.
So it's no longer magic.
So I stole from them all the future stories that they would have told and all the times they would have thought about it and wondered how it was done. So at that age, I learned that it serves nobody to
tell. You don't tell
them
anymore, do you?
No, even if they insist they want to know or they're sure they want to know.
Good for you.
The reality is the story's over.
Yes.
But if I don't tell them, it continues forever.
Yes. And tell me some of the stories that you've had happen in your career as a magician.
Oh my goodness. Every time I say
something,
everything that's happened to me on stage, you know, nothing new could happen. It's all happened. Something new comes along surprises
me. Can you remember any of them?
Oh, all of them. Yes.
The most unusual, compelling.
I've got two that kind of fulfill that category. One is particularly not happy. It's kind of a sad one, but a life experience that, I don't know, I learned from, I guess. Mm-hmm. It was shocking. I was performing at a bar mitzvah,
mm-hmm.
and the grandfather of the bar mitzvah boy keeled over and died on my stage.
Oh.
He had a heart attack. So that, when magicians get together and they tell stories of what's happened, what's gone wrong, or the crazy things, that one usually I save to the end because that trumps what's happened.
My.
It was 15 years ago, and it's still sad and devastating.
Yes.
So that's one of the most unusual ones.
You just gently stopped and...
I stopped the music, I blew out the fire on the juggling torches, and I asked if there was a doctor. It was a bar mitzvah, so of course there were a bunch of doctors. And so then I had them call 911, and I took everyone that was 18 years old or younger out of the room, and I taught them magic until the ambulance took them away.
Uh-huh.
And for a week, I didn't want to do a show. I just didn't want to, it was pretty devastating.
And then one
that's a little bit disgusting, but on the funnier side... is I was performing on a cruise ship, and a guy in the front row who had been at the midnight buffet and had consumed too much alcohol and too much food was throwing up. So I stopped the show, and I asked the sound guy to come down with a trash can, and as he puts the trash can in front of the guy's mouth, the guy vomits all over the guy's arm. So I didn't make a friend there with the sound guy. And then I asked the lighting person to get the security and to get the ship doctor. So they come in, and they invite him to leave, and he doesn't leave, and he's still throwing up. And I say, "Sir, can you go?" He goes, "No, I don't want to go. I'm enjoying the show."
Oh, my.
And then continues to throw up, and I insisted that he left. But...
Are there differences in your shows for children? You perform mostly for adults, don't you?
Mostly for adults, yes. But
Why is that?
It's a place where I specialize. There's a real rewarding feeling of having an audience of anywhere from 50 to 500 corporate types who have their arms crossed and they don't want to be there. They're checking their watch, their cell phones there, and they assume it's for kids.
Uh-huh.
And then within a few minutes, they're leaning on the edge of their chair and they're laughing along and they're glad that they're there. And I like converting them from the early arms crossed and not wanting to be there to thoroughly enjoying.
Well, what Why were they there? You said they don't want to be there. Is that like part of some program and it's kind of required that they just...
Yeah, it's often, you know, a sales retreat, a product mm-hmm. launch, a seminar of some sort, a workshop, lecture. What happens is all the employees or all the clients have to be there for...
credit for going or something. Yeah. Uh-huh. Good for you and for them. And what about, what would you do differently for children in a children's show, for example? You say you specialize. Are there different tricks?
Some are different tricks. Sometimes you do the trick differently. With the adults, I certainly do smarter humor. And with kids, it's probably a little bit more visual, a little more silly, a little bit more get on the ground on your knees with them and have the magic happen close up. And
but you seem to be really that kind of person, though.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fun to get in there in the trenches.
By the way, I've known Robert for quite a while now, so I can say that.
Yeah,
right?
I like getting in the trenches. I like getting my feet wet and my hands dirty.
And what else? What else about magic? Talk about magic.
So, it is just a way to create theater, and specifically, magic is interesting because people pay you, hire you, show up, and they want you to deceive you. Want you to. Yes. Be deceptive, to deceive them, to lie to them.
So that's the part I'm interested in.
So a lot of people call us honest liars. Mm-hmm. We are asked to lie. We lie straight to the face, and it's done with integrity just to entertain them. So it's you'll steal a watch, and you give it back. Mm-hmm. You tell them the box is empty, and then you lie to them, and then something's actually in the box. So it's a very strange feeling to know that it's okay to lie under these circumstances.
Where do magicians get their equipment?
So some of us build them, some of us buy it, some of us have them manufactured. Sometimes we go to magic shops.
But so if you create something brand new, then you have to build your own.
Yeah, equipment. Or have someone build it. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm not as handy as the others.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And you carry a big trunk with you.
Well,
and you're very physical humor. You juggle.
So 5 years ago, I had a motorcycle accident.
Oh, my.
And so my show was 250 pounds, and I traveled by myself, and I lugged all these cases around. It was a real smart way of doing it with wheels, and they all locked together and all that. And since then, because of my injury, I've been reducing size and weight, and I'd never been interested in being a mind reader or mentalist, but it's the equipment is much lighter.
Yeah, well,
so I really embraced it, and now I'm really enjoying it, because instead of the audience laughing and clapping at the end of a trick, they go completely silent. Their jaw just goes agape.
Yes.
And it's a strange feeling because you feel like you weren't successful when the whole room goes silent for, for 10, 12 seconds. Uh-huh. But then you learn to see that as a different
kind of
reward. And
then they explode into applause or
laughter, applause, or whatever it is. But to hear a pin drop with a room of 500 people.
So that indicates that they're thinking.
Yes.
That you've promoted.
Puzzled them, flummoxed them. I've got them to just have their brain maybe even just lock up and just be... not moving for a moment.
So I saw a magician once. His name was Albert Goshman.
Oh, yeah, I know Al Goshman.
Mm-hmm. And I saw him. We used to live up in the Hollywood Hills, not too far from the Magic Castle. And it was a time when you had to know somebody to get in. It was really not open.
It's still
to
that way.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
So somehow my husband and I got in, and there he was at a table, and we were standing maybe a foot away from his hands. And we watched those hands... so carefully. And I always think not much gets by me. Generally, not much gets by me.
You want to try one?
Do it while we're talking. I could not see. I could have had a magnifying glass. His fingers were doing one thing, and the results were something else. Okay, Robert's going to bring out a trick, and I'm going to have to describe it for you, because I wish this were a television moment. Okay, deck of red cards.
Name a card, any card at all, and after you name the card, do not take your eyes off my hands.
Oh, name a card.
Just name a card.
Okay. Seven of diamonds.
Do not take your eyes off my hands. There is one card now upside down, the seven of diamonds. There is one card.
Oh, see, you are a liar. I mean, I made up that. You didn't give me any kind of information.
And that's the only card that was upside down in the deck.
And that's the only card in the whole deck that was upside down, the card that I said. And, by the way, I struggled. I tossed a few around. I was going to do a three of hearts and a spades, and I decided a seven of diamonds. How can you do such a thing? I can see where they used to burn witches at the stake. It's just too mysterious. It's like you, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm silent.
That's exactly the reaction that the new kind of mind reading stuff goes.
Is, my goodness, I mean, it doesn't seem possible that can be done.
That's exactly what a magician does, is he figures out what is impossible and then figures out a way to do the impossible.
Oh, I'm just tormented here. Okay, and if we did it again...
We could do it again.
Let's do it again.
Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Okay.
So Robert's getting out another deck of cards.
Same deck of cards.
Name a new card.
Okay, I'm going to name a new card.
And do not take your eyes off the hand.
I'm going to name the third card I think of, which is going to... I say it out loud now.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
Eight of clubs.
There's now one card upside down. Your card, the eight of clubs.
Yes, he's showing me all the cards face up, face up, face up.
And there's one upside down one.
One upside down one, eight of clubs. Okay. So you're in cahoots with the devil.
That's the only way it's possible.
Interesting, or God, I guess. Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much. What else do you have in that?
Oh, lots of things.
Oh, what is your favorite kind of trick to do besides that one?
Well, you know what?
Or are they all?
The pickpocketing is always fun. Because everybody thinks that it can't happen to them, that they would catch it.
Yes.
And when they see somebody else up on stage, they go, oh, he must really not be paying attention.
Yes.
And then when I do it to them, they're like, oh, it can happen to anyone.
Well, I think it can. I once saw a documentary on pickpockets years ago.
Yeah.
And this fellow who used to be a pickpocket and now wasn't doing that for, you know, a living, gave a demonstration. You didn't see how he did it, but he went on a crowded bus in New York. And he took the shirt off a man under his jacket. I mean, the man was wearing a jacket. And this fellow did something and passed by him and had his shirt in his hand. And the man on the bus was without a shirt.
That's fantastic.
And he didn't feel it. Oh, the skills in this life. What are you doing now?
Oh, here's another one that's also quick that you
Robert
can describe.
Robert has just taken out some nice, crisp, single dollar bills.
How many was that?
Well, looked like
one,
four
two,
of them.
Three, four, five.
Five, okay. Five.
Now, the most requested magic trick is?
What?
Can you double your money?
Can you double your money?
Abracadabra.
Okay.
Twice as much money. I'll show you.
One, two, three, four, five.
$2 bills.
Yes.
Both sides.
Both sides. And by the way, I'm staring at him.
Of course,
those were $1 bills, and now they're $2 bills.
And of course, it was just an illusion. Abracadabra, just like that. Now I'm right back to where I started. One,
and now
two,
they're
three.
All $1 bills
both
again.
Both sides.
Gee, if you could do that in some big way.
I need to borrow some $100 bills then.
Yes, or more. Well, this is just exceptional. Oh, thank you. What else do you want to tell us about magic? Because then I have a question for you.
Oh, anything you want to know except for how the trick is done.
Yes.
I've lately been teaching some magic, and that's been fun.
Yes. Is it? Oh, so that's a way of learning how they're done. You have, if you want to be a magician.
So if you want to be a magician, there are books at the library. There's information on the internet.
No, but if you get a private teacher like you.
Mentor, yeah.
Yes, I mean, you have to learn from the greats to become one, I would guess.
Yeah.
So then you tell how things are done.
So my rule is I only teach things that the other person will perform, can do. So in other words, if you needed a special...
Do they have to sign papers or anything?
No signing papers. It's the honor system.
Because you could make those papers disappear.
Absolutely. The ink vanishes.
Right.
Yeah.
The
thing is if it's a trick that you can do and you will do, I'll teach it to you to kind of continue the magic.
Right.
But if you just want to learn the secret and you're not going to perform it,
that.
Then the answer is no, I won't teach it.
Right. And so probably you get honorable people.
Not always. There's all types of magic, just like there's all types in every business.
I mean, who will spill the beans? Well, you see some people spill the beans on YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all out there if you want to find it, but I think, like we said earlier, we just don't really want to know how it's done. We like being fooled.
Okay. Well, I have a question for you
in
a minute. Before I ask you the question I was going to ask you, tell us about Comedy Talks and what prompted that in you and Juliana.
There's three basic events that happened to kind of get us to where we are. The first one is when I was a 12-year-old magician, there were a few vaudevillians still alive. And we'd sit around at a diner or the dinner table, and they would do things with the salt shakers and the forks and ketchup packets. And they'd tell stories of being on the road and, you know, meeting Houdini. And they'd tell stories about working with Bob Hope and Milton Berle and Charlie Chaplin. And these stories, I would hang on every word. So I learned a respect for the lineage and heritage of humor back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fast forward to about 6 years ago. Let me put a year on that. It's about 2006. I'm backstage at Hermosa Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach, California. And that's run by a gentleman named Mike Lacey. And every night that I was there... Dave Coulier and Gary Shandling and Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld and the list is long. They'd hang out backstage in the green room. And so I would ask a short open-ended question, and they would all start talking, and they go in 10 minutes all telling stories and all that, and then it would be my time to go on stage and perform. I didn't want to leave the room, number one. And while I was on stage, I wasn't thinking about the show, which I'm usually very good about being in the moment. Mm-hmm. I was thinking the audience should be backstage as a fly mm-hmm. in the wall, listening to these yeah. guys tell stories. And the difference between what was going on there and what I've seen before is they were really honoring each other and celebrating each other instead of the put down and one-upping each other and mm-hmm. all that. So I took the idea and I told Juliana Gallen, who produces Ask a Scientist, which was a very successful kind of lecture series. And we talked about Inside the Actor's Studio and City Arts and Lectures and the Commonwealth Club and mm-hmm. Inside the Actor's Studio and all these things that we loved. And we thought we could find that nice match of honoring the celebrities, having a panel discussion with three of them, keeping it moving and funny and hip.
And bringing history.
And bringing in the history. So yeah. you learn the stories of all these people, who they toured with and who their influences are. And it's now documented. We're professionally videotaping it, and we're hoping to make a TV show out of it.
Oh, I hope you do. But meanwhile, I mean, I've seen, well, you have on your Comedy Talks website, can people see snips?
There's one 4.5-minute video there that's a snips of all three shows we've done. We've shot three shows.
Okay, so let's say that website, please.
That is comedytalks.com.
Okay.
comedytalks.com.
And the only reason I'm so strict about spelling it is because if people miss it by one letter, they'll never find you.
Yeah, or they can Google it, too. They can Google Comedy Talks.
Okay. So, I mean, Carol Channing.
We had Carol Channing. We had Rich Little. We had Steve Rossi from Allen & Rossi. We had Robert Morris from How to Succeed in Business.
But Carol, they're all brilliant. They are all brilliant. But to see Carol Channing, I never knew too much about her. I never knew too much about her in terms of her brilliance. The woman is a genius.
Yes, hardworking woman, too.
Yes.
And, you know, she says that she learned her comedic timing from George Burns, who was an expert at it.
Yes, yes.
And, yeah, so she replaced Gracie for a few shows while Gracie was ill.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me ask you now, given your whole life, if I say to you right now, and you have to come up with somebody who gets your love letter, because that's what I know, that in every life experience are the seeds of a love letter to someone.
Well, do I have to choose just one? Because I thought of too many.
Okay, well, and by the way, obviously for people listening, not necessarily romantic, most are not. No, don't choose one.
Well, the first one is Pascal, my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is probably my parents for being so supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly one to Juliana Gallen for being so excellent at helping me produce Comedy Talks.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably some of my influences in comedy and magic.
Yes, okay.
Specifically the one who got me into magic 27 years ago.
Oh, is he still living?
Yeah, he's in Orlando, Florida. Okay. And he's performing on cruise ships.
So I think he's going to be just blown away by a letter from you, is he not?
Oh, I think he would really enjoy that.
Okay, so what do you want to tell him?
Okay, so him first.
Mm-hmm.
Just.
And I hope you go home and do this
over time.
And I know how busy you are, and so just to reassure you and anybody else, love letters do not have to be long. You can take one precious memory, and so, what was his name?
John Eakin.
Dear John, I've just been thinking about you lately a lot. And I'm remembering the time you, and just say it.
Yeah.
If you don't have time for a lot, you can write him another one, you know, in 2 months.
Absolutely.
Okay, so go ahead. What do you want to?
Well, I would thank him for being excellent in magic, for being inspiring, for being a good friend now that we know each other, mm-hmm. and for just being such a positive person. There are people out there that everybody has something nice to say about, and he is one of them. And he is also the type of person who will only say nice things about other people. So.
Oh, so isn't that a wonderful thing to put in a love letter?
Yeah.
His qualities.
Yeah.
That's lovely. Okay, and what about, just historically, because I think almost everybody has some historical place in this world. You belong somewhere with what you're doing. And as there are not a ton of magicians, I mean not as many as certain other things, you hold a real place in theater. And you're going to be teaching other people. You say you're doing that now.
Yes.
So what about letters even to your heroes? They don't have to be living.
So the two heroes that I have are Johnny Carson and Victor Borga, and neither of them are living.
That, and neither of them are magicians.
Actually, Johnny Carson was a magician at a young age and a hobbyist throughout his whole life.
Okay, and Victor Borga was a magician by what he did.
Musician, yes.
But, I mean, even the magician part of him, to make you think constantly that you're going to hear something,
yes,
you know, and it disappears.
Yes.
So, so where will you send those?
Oh, where would I send those?
Yes, you have to write it out by hand, put it in an envelope, stamp it, and mail it for it to be a real love letter.
Oh, I don't know where you send it.
Right. That's a little tricky. So you could send it to yourself. You could send it to Victor Borg's family.
Oh, that'd be nice.
And Johnny Carson's family. If you could find that, that would be... I've done this with people, descendants, and it makes a difference. It does not talk about magic, by the way. So that shouldn't be too hard to find.
That's true. We do have that in common. The moment we have that in common. The moment that a magic's done, they feel like a 9-year-old. The moment someone receives and reads a love letter, they're
touched. Stunning. It's stunning.
It's a very magical moment both ways.
Yes, I mean it's life altering. The gift is that you remembered these things. The gift. It's astounding. I'm so excited here. I want to write one to Johnny Carson. But you could just say, "Dear Johnny, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to your children. Let the children have the joy of that. It'll be found by their children and their grandchildren." We have letters that are 300 years old.
Wow.
That are as readable as the day they were written.
From your family?
No, historically.
Historically.
I have a case full of them that I've collected. Good ink, not disappearing.
Of course.
Yes, and good paper that'll last.
Yes.
Through a little bit of tears and, you know, chicken soup and spilling things. But also, it's part of history. And if you send a videotape, you know, you can't play your Betamax, you can't play your cassettes, because they corrode.
Right.
But letters don't. I mean, they can, but they last for so long. John Hancock, Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
What's her name? That queen I like that nobody else does. Marie Antoinette.
Right.
You know, she got such the short end of the stick. Okay, so I hope you'll do a couple.
Absolutely.
Or a few.
Absolutely.
And wait and see what happens. And the magic is going to be, Mr. Magician, for what you get in return. Yes. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. This was fun.
This was so much fun talking to you.
It went so fast, too.
I know. It always does. I see Robert at many places, and it's fleeting, and it's a hug hello, and I've never actually gotten to sit down with you and talk.
This is nice.
It's just a joy. Thank you very, very much. And please remember, everybody, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen and Robert Strong saying goodbye.
Goodbye.